You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. The new historical novel, Tears of Honor, by Fresno author James Ardaes, documents the experiences of Japanese Americans during World War II. The sweeping narrative includes two boys from Kalwa who are forced into an internment camp and ultimately show their loyalty to America by joining the army and fighting in the war. I spoke with Ardaes about the novel and the extensive research he conducted while writing it. In the past, you have written mystery novels, you've written true crime. What drew you to historic fiction and specifically the Japanese American experience during World War II?
You know, that's a fascinating question. I get asked that a lot. And I've always been an avid reader of history. A number of years ago, I was asked to give a speech about the failures of the American judiciary, and I picked the Korematsu case, which involved the Supreme Court decision allowing the detention of Japanese Americans. And so I did a lot of research in it, and the more research I did, the more fascinated I became with why the government did what it did and with the reaction of the people that were detained and relocated. And then also the young men that went off and fought in Europe while their parents were in relocation centers. So I thought, as I read everything, I decided, you know, nobody's ever written a book from the perspective of all three of these participants so that a reader could understand why the government did what it did and make their own valuation and how it affected the people that were relocated and the motivation of the young men that fought in Europe, which I found intriguing.
So I have a friend who just happens to be reading the book, and she mentioned it in conversation. And so, of course, I said, oh, I'm going to talk to the author. And when I asked her what she thought of the book, she just said to me, kind of shaking her head, I had no idea our country did this. I had no idea. And I would imagine that that's something you're hearing a lot of from people who have read the book.
You know, I am. And I have to say that while I thought that people didn't know a lot about it, I am amazed that how many people knew nothing about it. And I think it's not a good thing that people don't know anything about it, but I think it is a good thing that people are seeing it and how revealing it is. And for them, how troubling it is. I mean, it really brings home the kinds of things that can happen very easily in our country. And so, I get that comment. I get that comment a lot. And then people start asking me all kinds of questions. And of course, I'm always happy to answer if I have the time.
Well, one of the things that I had never considered until I encountered your novel is the legal argument that led to the detainment of Japanese Americans during World War II. And you, as from what you said earlier, it seems that that was sort of your entry point to this topic. Can you briefly share or talk about the politics that led to this horrific policy?
You know, there was a general, John DeWitt, on the West Coast, and then an American whose names most people will know, which was Earl Warren, at the time Attorney General of California, with overarching ambitions to become the governor of California. And then the President of the United States at the time, Franklin Roosevelt. The hysteria that existed in the country, the demonization that Earl Warren engaged in with respect to Japanese Americans. And what you really see is a weak government response and a failure to abide by constitutional principles on behalf of our leaders. Because it's really important that our leaders stand up for the Constitution, which is the principal document that binds this country, regardless of color, creed, gender, or orientation. And the failure of the judiciary, when they knew the level of anger in this country after Pearl Harbor, this was a distinct group. They looked different than Caucasians, who were the predominant group in the country. And the willingness to engage in overlooking what the dissenting judges, Justices Murphy and Rutledge and Jackson, engaged in. And I found it very interesting as a retired judge that it was the conservatives who were the ones that were so opposed to this detention, and the liberals, Douglas and Black and Frankfurter and the rest of them, that were so much in favor. I thought that was a very interesting dichotomy. And what it shows is how fragile our freedom and our rights are depending upon who's in charge and the popularity or unpopularity of the reaction to major public issues. And that's what you see here. You saw a group of people who basically were kind of swept aside by the judiciary. I've always regarded it as a major embarrassment and failure on the part of the judiciary.
So I understand that you did 5 years of research into this topic, and it certainly shows in the novel itself. I would love for you to talk a little bit about what you learned in your research about the experiences of Japanese Americans living in the internment camps, because it seems as if your descriptions in the novel go a long way to force us to recognize how much propaganda and the media at the time led to a false remembering of the actual lived experiences of the people who were forced into these camps.
You know, that's really a very accurate statement, a false remembering. You had a group of people that was identifiable, and at that time, probably culturally less assimilated than Japanese Americans would be now. So they had more of a cultural identity than probably young Japanese Americans have now. And part of that cultural identity, I learned, was respect for authority and acceptance. I don't think you would find the same thing now, but I was amazed by the fact that so many people simply locked the doors to their homes and their businesses and drove down or marched down to these detention centers and just turned themselves in. There was a small group of people who resisted, but generally speaking, the group was resentful but passive. And I was curious, and what I really wanted to know is, okay, if I was a young man, and somebody locked me up and my parents up, and I was an American citizen. I had done nothing wrong other than being ethnically or racially different. And then I was confronted with whether to fight for that country that had locked me up. Would I do it? And if I did, why would I do it? And that became to me kind of the overarching question. And then the other question was, or the thing that I learned was how a group of people basically created a society within the confines of these detention centers, a very organized and successful society. And then when it was over, they came back and reassimilated. I thought it was fascinating. I mean, I have a lot of other reactions, but I thought it was a fascinating thing. And then I got to interview so many of these young men that fought. And to me, it was amazing. I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to talk to so many heroic people whose story really hasn't been told to younger generations. I didn't talk about it. I mean, I had to get people to talk.
Was there reluctance to open up to you about this? Or was there just a desire to not revisit this painful past?
I think for a lot of the detainees, it was the desire to put the past behind them. And the other thing is the men that fought, they answered my question fairly easily and clearly about why they did what they did. But when you consider what they did, they didn't talk about it much unless you asked them specific questions. As a group, you know, there was no bragging, elaboration, exaggeration. They were very factual about it. They saw some of the most brutal battles of World War II. And when I say brutal, I mean god-awful brutal battles. And they would talk about it, but not in the sense of embellishing themselves or extolling themselves. They would mostly talk about what their friends did and how they did it. And I just found it, frankly, amazing and unbelievably impressive.
Well, I've been talking to James R. Dice, author of the new historical novel, Tears of Honor, It is a sweeping, important, and timely story. And I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about it.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much for talking to me.